You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, episode 217, Thomas Vanek joining us as he always does on Tuesday. And I have a big surprise for you guys today. No, I just...
Morning, gentlemen. What do you got? Sabretooth coming on tonight?
Yeah. We're going to talk Ryan Miller night one more time. Anyway, what's up, Banner?
Nothing. Doing great. How are you guys?
We're good. You know what? Well, let's clear the air on something here. Jessie Pegula, the Pegula's daughter, the tennis player, professional tennis player, actually having an incredible season, wrote an article in the Players Tribune and talked about her mother's condition, where her status is now, kind of like what's happened and where she's at and why she's been kind of out of the picture. So everyone has known there's been a health concern. And Jessie Pegula brought it to light. I know Craig read the article already this morning. And Craig, I didn't know if you wanted to just kind of hop in here and let us know what you learned in the article.
Yeah. You know, listen, I mean, I really feel for Jessica and the entire family. I mean, just so much to take in and so, you know, just emotional roller coaster for the family. And the nice thing is trying. I think the article that Jessica Pegula wanted to kind of get off her chest, she wants people to know where they're at right now, to give a little bit of clarity to maybe a lot of people out there that are asking questions and wondering, you know, what is going on. And she just gave some clarity to the family and how they're doing, and most importantly, Kim and how she's doing. It seems like she's got a long way to go, but she's in a good spot and she's continuing to improve every single day. And I think, you know, when you read it, it's a tough read, an emotional read. You know, you have a loved one that obviously is going through some severe health issues and hurdles, and you know, from what I gather, she's getting better every single day, and that's the most important thing for you know, Kim and the family. So just all my thoughts. I you know, listen, I most important thing is to respect the privacy of this family, because you know, they're going through this together, and it's none of our bloody business. And, you know, I just hope them all the best and, you know, support them.
So there you go, Thomas. We just wanted to make sure that we mentioned that kind of.
Yeah, no, I actually read it with my morning coffee as well. And I thought it was really well done by Jessie. And anytime you read something like that, it hurts, right? I mean, and I'm just, again, from the beginning, even before Kim had this, I was always amazed by Jessie to be so driven, right? I mean, when you're in a family that's worth the amount of money they have, to not take the easy, so-called easy way and go into the family business. And I know she's mentioned that in the article, you know, is it time for her to stop playing tennis and help out and do this? But, you know, I mean, what a driven lady she is by being a top 10 player in a pretty damn hard sport in tennis. And especially the last months what she has gone through. So
I guess so. If you think back to June, there was all these rumors going around the internet that she had passed away, and she referenced the cardiac arrest that she went into in June of last year. Mm-hmm. And if you recall, one of her matches at Wimbledon was postponed due to weather, but I don't think there was any weather issues in London that day. So, I mean, I don't know if that's just a strange coincidence or what, but I mean, I couldn't imagine. I mean, we hear about players all the time. Their parents passing away, you know, during the season, then they come back to play. I mean, I've never had to deal with that. So, you know, I mean, right. I couldn't imagine having to drive through a professional tennis career wondering, you know, the status of your mother every single day. But
yeah, that's a lot of weight. That's a lot of weight for a young woman, the entire family, but Jessica still being in the public eye and having mm-hmm. to train and do what she has to do to be successful at, I mean, there's tremendous amount of pressure you know, she talked a little bit about anxiety and stuff like that. I'm sure it's very, very tough situation for Jessica. So,
yeah, I think Riv's mentioned it. And like I said before, the article was great. And you just hope that, you know, now it's out there. She gave some insight. Hopefully they just, you know, leave it now within the family. You would hope that people don't be asking questions on the media side of more details or this. I think.
Well, that has to be why she wrote it, right?
Because for sure.
That's an easy publication. I don't know if a publication is the right word, but that's an easy statement for PSE to make on behalf of Terry, on behalf of the family and from the Bills or whatever. That's an easy statement to make. But because Jessie's in the public eye, and when she wins and loses a match, she has to answer any question that comes at her. Athletes are fair game. People want to know, did you lose the match? Is there something wrong with your mother? Is your mother not doing well? You know what I mean? Like, so I wonder if that's probably the reason why she went about it this way, because this is her way to put it out to the masses to say, like, hey, leave me the fuck alone. I just want to focus on my mom and focus on tennis.
100% correct. Yep.
And that's what she should be focused on. She shouldn't be having to answer these questions continuously about her family. It's none of anyone's business. This is her statement, right? This is her ability to, you know, to allow people to understand kind of a little bit more of what happened on those days, weeks, and now we're into many months later, and people are still wanting to know and asking questions. This will clarify a lot of what the family went through, what she went through personally, and you know, all we need to as media people, because we are media people now, it's to you know, say thank you to Jessica and the family for at least opening up and letting us know. But now it's okay. Now it's let them work this out as a family. And the most positive thing that I read in the article is that Kim every day seems to get a little bit better, and that's the most important thing. So
I like those Player Tribune articles.
They are good. Yeah.
Listen, we all have shit going on,
mm-hmm.
right? Everyone has shit, and athletes have to be a little more guarded with their shit, because their performance all comes down to right down to how's your personal life. You know, like what kind of shit's bothering you? And it allows players a safe place to write in their own words. I say players, athletes, or people in the public eye, even for that matter, to just kind of to write what's on their mind, maybe what they've dealt with, and just kind of put it out there. And there's been a lot that I've read, from the Maltby one to the, you know, I mean, I'll read this Jesse Pegula one, but I mean, there's one about Mark Parrish and his, his alcoholism, mm-hmm. and talking about, if I'm going to rehab, I'm going in drunk, you know, like,
yeah, very, very powerful.
I'm 11
that
years
one.
Sober, guys, you know, like, right. Fuck, like there's, you know, there's a reason for that. And, you know, so these articles, you don't necessarily even have to write an article as much as you just have to read an article, relate to it, and get some kind of help from it, you know, of some, and not selfishly feel better about it. Like that Mark Parrish article made me feel very good about the fact that I never had to check into rehab, you know, like made me very comfortable and happy. I mean, I feel bad for him. I know people in that situation. We had Brent Sopel on episode 9. If you're new to the show, go check it out. It's as deep as you can get amongst pro athletes. And, you know, like there's a lot of comfort, unfortunately, in knowing that there are other people dealing with the same shit you are. There's a lot of comfort in it on any level. Right. So, love these articles.
Before we move on, I think the articles are so great. It's because it's not a Q&A, right? It's not in front of a camera or not even off camera and answering questions and talking about it. I think these people who are doing these articles or these athletes, they're doing that at their own time and what they want to express as much as they want, as little they want. And I think it just comes out so much better than an interview, you know? So that's why I think they're always a good read.
Well, careers are in the public eye. So I feel like we should help them heal in the public eye. And I like that they're comfortable. This is, we're all vulnerable, but we're all very guarded and protective of ourselves and our personal lives and our families.
Professional athletes are human. Okay. We're good at what we do. We're good at what we did. We're all human. We all go through the same struggles that everybody else goes through. And I just read these Player Tribune articles, and a lot of them are when players are, you know, athletes are going through their darkest times and whatever that is. And I think people out there that think that they're alone in their struggles, I think sometimes can read this and say that they're not alone. Okay. And, you know, Mark Parrish and Brett Sopel, two players that we had mentioned, going through some very difficult times in their life and having to try and get help and the path it took and all the struggles it took. You know, people that are reading these articles may be dealing with the same thing. And they know that they're not alone. There's others out there that are dealing with the same thing. And I think this sometimes these real articles can help people and help support, you know, their issues. And hopefully they can find some way.
Well, I'm telling you firsthand that they do. I mean, they help me stay sober. You know, like they're little reminders as to why you're sober or why you're living a certain life. You know what I mean? Because you have to in order to stay on the straight and narrow. So they do help. They definitely do help. So good for Jesse Pegula. And we'll end this discussion on respect the privacy of the family. And, you know, we wish Kim Pegula a full recovery.
Gentlemen, I listened on, was it last Friday or Thursday? Not the midterm greats, but the viewership you guys were talking about. And I think you guys missed the point. It's tough to find the games. I don't know when is TNT night. When is an ESPN? Lots of game on ESPN Plus. Like I'm constantly every night when I want to watch a game, I go on my phone and I have to see, okay, is this a TNT game? Is this an ESPN game? Do I have to go on ESPN Plus? I think that's why viewership is down, because you have so many platforms. You there's no consistency of when, you know, and maybe there is, and I don't know it because I don't pay attention to it, but is it every Tuesday that it's TNT? Is it every other Tuesday? Is it a Wednesday? When are the games on ESPN? Is there a certain, is it a Friday night?
Well, let me ask you this, Vanner. So you have, your oldest boy is 15 turning 16, right?
Yeah.
When he watches NHL games, how does he watch it? Does he watch it on the TV or is he watching it on his phone in his room?
Well, both. I mean, both? Most of the time it's down here when I have it on, and he'll go in his room and put it on. But it's more of like you guys mentioned, I think it's more of a background game. It's not a sit down like when I used to and just watch the game.
A background game, but how is he watching it? Is he watching it? Does he go on your provider on your, you know, he has it into his phone, or is he going on some streaming place that's apparently, you know, not illegal, but it, I mean, you get free live games and kind of stuff like that.
Yeah, no, no. He uses my login for ESPN Plus and, yeah, you know, whatever the cable we have, if it is on TNT. But then again, it's not so much the kids, because he'll have it on when I have it on and he sees it's a good game and he likes to watch Tage Thompson. But it's like you guys mentioned, he watches and then he's on his phone for the next 5 minutes. Then he'll.
I think you make an unbelievable point. And you're referencing Friday's episode. It was the grades. It was just the first half of the grades. We had the conversation about it, about the ratings and everything, and how viewership's down like 103,000 mm-hmm. viewers per week and or per game.
Per game, yeah.
And when it was on NBCSN, every Wednesday you knew there were games on. Every Wednesday night, I knew it's like, and in Canada, Saturday night is hockey mm-hmm. night in Canada. And I also think Wednesday night is a hockey night in Canada, not hockey night in Canada broadcast maybe, but there are games on Wednesday nights. For some reason, I think so. At least there used to be. So it's absolutely right. I have no idea where to find a hockey game anymore. I mean, unless you have the NHL package, which I do, and you go to channel 700 on your thing and it's whatever it is, and you can see that's how I ended up watching the Rangers Flames game last night. But because I don't think that was on my cable. So it's impossible to find games. The NHL is the worst advertised and hardest sport to find on TV. Like the NBA, I can find the NBA, and I only watch NBA when my son is with me, but I can find NBA because I know exactly what days they're on. I know what channels they're on. They do a great, great job marketing it. The NHL, I think that's the point, Van. I think they are missing.
It is. 100%. I mean, they, and again, I think the platform that the NHL has now is great. Like TNT is awesome. I think as far as the you know, notoriety by the NBA on TNT, now it's NHL on TNT. Can they do better stuff within that? I think it's getting a little bit too gimmicky, but I think you have a good provider and then you have ESPN. But to me, I don't even know how many, I think I've watched maybe one game all year this year that was actually on ESPN, not ESPN Plus. So, and you know, do a majority of people have all ESPN Plus? I think people are all over nowadays that you don't have your basic, you know, cable provider anymore. There's so many streaming services. But again, our whole point is, or my whole point was to begin this, was the NHL has to do a better job of marketing which nights are important and feature nights. And then you pick whatever the best game of that day is, or do a doubleheader and make it, like I said, every Wednesday or every Tuesday. So there's some type of pattern to it.
I agree. Well, you talk about viewership. I think they need to work on the All-Star game, the skills competition, the entire All-Star game package. Is an absolute. I don't want to over swear and swear for the sake of swearing. Okay, like I find I do that too much, for the sake of emphasis, of a point. But this is absolutely fucking embarrassing.
Yeah, it wasn't. It was a joke. Go ahead, Riffs. I know you got your blowing up over there.
Well, Rimmer blew up on Shred and Reagan this morning. I guess he went off about the All-Star game.
There's just there are some things that I kind of liked, and there were things that I just do not like. Like what was the dunk tank one where they're on the beach and they're listen to me, I'm going to tell you this. I actually liked it. I'm not even kidding you. I liked that one where these guys are out of the arena. They're wearing some flip-flops and shorts and a t-shirt. You got Sidney Crosby sitting in the bloody like dunk tank. I'm sitting there going, Sidney Crosby is the guy that you're putting in the dunk tank? This is very impressive.
I couldn't fucking believe that Sidney Crosby was sitting in the dunk tank.
But were you not somewhat entertained with watching these guys missile pucks?
Okay? There's only one thing I would have changed with Sidney Crosby in the dunk tank.
Okay.
I would have had Ovi shooting, not Rantanen.
True. Yeah.
Like,
I'm going to tell you right now, Ovi should have been on the other side. That's the best part about it. He should have been on the other side. But I'm watching that, and I thought, to me, I liked it because the guys were out of the rink. They had some fans there watching. They were cheering on. These guys are in the sun. That, to me, is something that hockey players would do all day long, okay? Because it kind of brings you back into a small bubble of when you were a kid and you went and shot pucks in your backyard, okay? And you shot puck after puck after puck after puck. And I look at these young guys. They're sitting there missling pucks at surfboards and dunking guys, like big name guys in the league. And I thought that was good because it was away from the rink. The stuff that happened in the rink is what I shake my head at. Like, listen, Sergei Ovechkin, he had himself a night. Okay. What, it was just too much.
That they let him score. Get rid of the kids, would you?
It was just far too much.
Like, it's such a slow, the skills competition is such a slow, just terrible event. First of all, could you imagine if Cale Makar got concussed, skating around, blowing a wheel and sliding into the boards? How about that one? That's a good look for the NHL.
All right. So I went to one and I turned down, I think, four or five, maybe six other ones. One was my first one. The only one I went to was in Montreal, and it was cool because it's an all-star game. We got to see other stars and stuff. So the weekend itself, for me, as a young guy at the time, was really, really cool because I got to see some older stars that I looked up to. But the other times, I didn't want to go back because it was more annoying than rewarding, because it was, especially back then. I think now it's a little bit better because the last game is a Wednesday. They have a bye week either before or after. So there is some time. So that's why I think you see a lot of the stars now pulling out. But I think there needs to be just a change. Make it shorter, especially the skills. Why does it have to drag out for this long? I agree with Riffs. I actually like that outside shooting. But to me, that's not that should not be show it on TV for 10 minutes. Then they show 40 minutes something else. Then they come back to it. Like, those are events that Florida, I think, did a good job creating by bringing in, you know, Fort Lauderdale. This is what we can do here. But yeah, those should be events that guys, when they fly in on a Thursday, have them do it and then show just a couple of glimpses of it. Like, it's a sidekick event off the actual All-Star game. It shouldn't be included in the skills. That's just, you know, the hometown team creating something else for fans before the skills competition takes place Friday night. As far as the skills competition, to me, make it 90 minutes. 90 minutes, it's all you need. Keep the fastest skater, because it's always been like that.
Yep.
Yep. Hard a shot, accuracy shooting, and then finish with a shootout.
A shootout relay. I watched a shootout relay, Vanner. This was back when, Peter Forsberg was in it and all this. And they were flying. They were going in like they wanted to friggin' score. Okay.
Right.
They made their move and then they sprinted back because they had to be over the blue line before the next guy went. And these guys are highly competitive. We were all highly competitive. If you put high end, like, I mean, you get these men, even though they don't really want to be at the All-Star game, just like you said, Vanner.
Yep.
If you press the buttons on these guys the right way, their intensity level will skyrocket on its own. And when you just have something that's fun and simple, like a breakaway relay, these guys are gonna ramp things up. Okay.
Well, just like I said, but here's how I would do it, because I remember when I went to it, I mean, I was at the rink for 6 hours and you're sitting around in your gear for 5 hours. Guys are like, this is, you know, I mean, they got their BioSteel bottles filled with beer and vodka and whatever, but no one wants to be there for 5 hours. Make it 90 minutes, fastest skaters. Don't just have four guys do it. You know, we all know the Dylan Larkins, McDavid, you got to make them go. Pick the 10, 12, make 10, 12 guys do it and make it fun and tell them, hey, try hard. This is what's going to promote our game. Hard a shot. You can't tell me, why is it only five or six guys going? pick 12 guys and make it more, like I said, so less
competition. Yeah, I want to see who has the weakest shot of the All-Star.
How about Seth Jones?
Yeah,
are you freaking kidding me? I bet money on this guy. It's the only way I was going to watch the friggin' skills competition. So I started betting on all these guys. Seth Jones?
But like,
I could beat him right now at age 48. I swear to God, I swear to God on my youngest kid's head, okay, that I will beat Seth Jones right now in a shooting competition. Couldn't even believe how soft his shot was.
Right, but accuracy shooting. Why am I not seeing a Leon Draisaitl? Or did he do it and I missed him?
I think he did do the accuracy shooting. And okay. I think it stunk to high hell. I think he was. Oh, you're right. Highest, yeah, yeah. He had the highest, 35 seconds to hit four targets. But, I'm like, what?
You know how sometimes we apologize for players' performances and we don't know if they're hurt or not? We don't know how drunk some of these guys are either.
But that's the whole point. But if you tell these guys, hey, all we want you there is for 90 minutes. And then go for your dinners, go meet up with your buddies and your families. I think guys would try a lot harder instead of being there for 5 hours and sitting there in the gear around. And then they do one relay where they go in with Sergey at 2 miles per hour.
Yeah.
I think kids want to see them try.
Kirill Kaprizov. Yeah.
He pulled out of the fastest.
He pulled out of all of them, right? He said that he wasn't going to do any of
he was supposed to do the fastest skater, and somehow I think he made Fiala do it for him. And then he just did the one little relay where they go in so slow. I think you do the fastest skater, hardest shot, accuracy, get more guys involved, tell them to try hard, and let's get out of here. And then you finish with a shootout, just like they have the 3v3 in your division. Two divisions go against each other, two against, and then, you know, final. And
who won it last year? Do you remember the fastest skater who won it last year? Was it Larkin?
No, it was Jordan Kyrou, wasn't it?
Not Larkin. Schwartz
or Joy. It was a kid from St. Louis, super fast.
I think it was Kyrou. I think no, that sounds, but my memory isn't good. I didn't even know what I had for lunch yesterday, so I'm not sure.
I'm pretty sure it was Jordan Kyrou last year. McDavid was in the race.
Yeah. Okay.
The whole point is just get 10 to 12 guys in each, in and out. Tell them compete hard for 90 minutes and then you can have your fun. As far as the game itself, I don't know. I didn't watch the 3-on-3. So, I mean, I've watched it in the past, so I can't tell you if it was fun this year or not. I didn't watch it.
Listen, I mean, most of those guys are going 50%. Most of them are probably hungover because they're trying to have an experience and relax a little bit. Right. So they're probably got in one the night before, and it's not a good hockey environment. It's just not enjoyable to watch.
And the other problem is,
I'm going to tell you this, the skills competition, I'm telling you, there's a few things that I enjoyed. I enjoyed watching that dunk tank competition. I enjoyed these guys just firing simple shots at surfboards and trying to dunk, big name guys like Cale Makar and Sidney Crosby. And I like something like that because it's away from the rink. It's away from the rink.
Did you see after Crosby?
Right, but that should be a side event, right?
Yeah, did you see Crosby got dunked? They're interviewing Rand, and there's Crosby still in the dunk tank, just kind of
leaning
over the side of the thing, just like with a smile on his face. I'm like, this is the face of the NHL for
10 years. Yeah.
You know, and he's sitting in a dunk tank.
I think the other problem is, and I remember that's why I turned some of them down, because I'm like, I feel like I should have been voted in, and then, you know, two guys pull out, and then they're like, hey, you weren't called an all-star, but because they're, you know, we got to pick one from every team, but now we want you to come. And I'm like, forget about it, I'm not coming now.
And I'll
like,
say
Rasmus Dahlin is the perfect example. Like, is he not your top five all-star this year? And he only went because Tage couldn't go. Like, that's not right
to me. Yeah. That's the real issue. How, like, they need to go back to a real game. Get rid of this.
You know what needs to happen is Sidney Crosby should not be at the All-Star game, and either should Alex Ovechkin.
Well, this takes nothing away
from these guys. They have given everything, their time. These guys have been in the league for how long? 16, 17 years. I think these guys have earned an opportunity just to take some time away. We do not need Sidney Crosby or Alex Ovechkin. If those guys were not at the All-Star game, it wouldn't have been friggin' any skin off my ass. Who I don't care to see Alex Ovechkin, who clearly does not want to be there.
I thought the, interview and the conversation
go and get me go and get me an awesome young kid from another team.
No, I think you're wrong. Them
right now.
I think you're wrong.
I think you're wrong. As long as they're playing at a high level and they are.
It has nothing
all-stars?
To do with them playing at a high level. There's
yes,
more
it does,
players
because you want
to promote.
You want the best players there.
No, Craig, you can't just keep force feeding the new man. These are guys that kept this fucking league afloat for 10 years when the league was horse shit.
I guarantee you, there was a ton of kids wearing Crosby and Ovechkin's jerseys. They came there to see those guys.
There's massive Crosby Ovechkin demographic that you know, like as we. Appeal to the young fans with the stupid dunk tank shit and all these other stupid drills. Like you're appealing to the masses, guys like me and my age and this generation of fans, men and women who watched Crosby and Ovechkin go head to head for years in conference finals, years on Wednesday night rivalry night, years in the playoffs. And guess what?
Stale, Petey.
What young guy would have replaced?
Hold on one second, man. I'll tell you what's stale. What was stale was PK Subban asking them to sign his fucking jersey. That was stale. Yeah. That was dog shit. And that was embarrassing for those two players to have that whole situation happen. The Sergei Ovechkin breakaway thing, we don't need that cutesy bullshit. But I'll tell you what was cool. Seeing the two of them connect in the 3-on-3, Crosby to Ovechkin, and he roofs it. Like, to me, that was pretty cool to see the two of them on the ice together. Yeah. And that might be the very last time that we ever get a chance to see that because they're playing at a high enough level where they both can be there and they're iconic players. That's like having Gretzky and Lemieux at the All-Star game on the same team together in 1997, 2 years before Gretzky retired in 99. Like, it's to me that
I would look for players that are top players in this league that are dynamic in their skill sets.
They're already there. McDavid's there. Dreisaitl's there.
Who's the young guy that you would replace the Crosby with? Like a Dylan Cousins? Like, is that what you're talking about?
No, like a Kyle Connor. Okay.
You think
so?
Take a back seat. Kyle Connor has been an absolute awesome rock star goal scorer in this league. He's got 59 points in the league in 52 games, 24 goals. What about William Nylander? William Nylander has 59 points, 28 goals. The guy is a wizard. What about Braden Point? Was he at the All-Star game?
Still haven't named anybody more exciting to me than Crosby or Ovechkin.
So Brady Point is not someone that that you think deserves to be there. Ovi
just became the third and maybe of only three players to score 800 goals. But let's bring in
what about
Kyle
Jasper
Connor,
Bratt,
Nylander, and Jesper Bratt, and let's bring those guys.
Pierre-Luc
in
Dubois.
Ovi. No,
here let's bring
still
in fucking Ovi so he can skate around with Sergei, his kid. Who's taking more limelight than the guys that are actually there? It's a joke, man.
It was embarrassing. It was definitely embarrassing.
All those players you brought up, that's what I'm saying. They need to expand it again because there's guys that are legit all-stars and they are not there because of the format.
Tim Stutzel from Ottawa. This kid was drafted, what, second overall or third overall? The kid is a wizard. He's 20 years old right now? He's got 49 points in 46 games? Like, Jasper Bratt has had an unbelievable year. Pierre-Luc Dubois, Mika Zibanejad. William Nylander is one of the biggest markets in the game in Toronto. The people that watch this are going to be people that are from Toronto.
So all those guys draw a better audience than Ovechkin and Crosby. So next year it's in Toronto.
Do they draw a bigger audience
than a Crosby and an Ovechkin?
Which, by the way, Van, they didn't have a choice but to name Toronto next year because the NHL All-Star game is in such dire straits that they can't afford to try it in a non-real hockey market like Sunrise. I'm sure the players love being in Sunrise, by the way.
If you're going to go to an All-Star game, that's exactly where you want to be. Every single All-Star. What do you like? you're going to put it in Toronto, and you're really going to have players.
But it's not about the players. It doesn't matter. It's not about the players. It's about the fans. It is not about the players, period. End of story. It's not. Yeah. I think we've already established that with the production that they put on.
Well, yeah, but listen, I mean, that's kind of where I'm going with this, you know, I just find, you know, to grow this game, continue to grow it, like Sidney Crosby and Alex Ovechkin. I mean, if you want to bring them there because of their faces, that's fine. But, you know, there's some younger players that I think you need to promote. That's all I'm going to say.
All right. Well,
Gary Bettman did a state of the union type thing, as he always does right before the All-Star game. Sidney Crosby was there and was asked about the All-Star or the playoff format, Craig. So you might be curious to know or happy to hear that he wants to do a 1-8 versus what they're doing now.
100% agree.
Vanner, take it, baby.
No, it's the best thing that came out of the whole weekend. I think that you know, Sid, who we just said, a big face of this, of the league.
Craig said he shouldn't have said
this. It's 1-8, and it should be 1-8. And then it's every, from second round, it should be reseeded.
I would love to do a poll in the NHL. I would love to hear what the poll, if you poll every single person in the entire league and ask them how the playoff format should be done, I would love to see how it comes out, because you guys know that it would be overwhelming, the 1-8, 2-7, 6-, right? I mean, it would be overwhelming. You play an entire season, you get the shit kicked out of you, you have multiple injuries, whether you're dealing with shoulders, neck, back, wrists, elbows, knees, hip flexors, you name it. You go through and you play through pain, discomfort for the greater good of your hockey team. And you're doing it because you're putting yourself in the best position possible to make the playoffs. You know, I sit there and I think to myself, the Toronto Maple Leafs that have scratched and clawed and continued to push, even without one of their top players in the last, you know, couple weeks in Austin Matthews, and they sit number 4, okay? And then all of a sudden, someone's going to tell you after you're done an 82-game schedule and you've done all of this, that you're going to sit there and play the number 6 ranked team in Tampa Bay Lightning that's won 2 Stanley Cups, you know, a few years ago, that still have all these elite top-end players in their lineup. How is that fair? How is that fair in this league? Gary Bettman is sitting there wanting, you know, divisional rivalries? Really? You think Winnipeg, Minnesota, is Winnipeg, Minnesota a division rival? Is that a division rival? Because that's who would be playing right now, okay, if they played. What about LA and Las Vegas? The
proximity
for sure. But it's an absolute joke. I mean, just we can go back to last year's playoff. I think that Leafs Lightning series in round one was one of the best series I watched all of the playoffs. Like that to me should be at least a second round, if not a conference, you know, final matchup. So it's, I mean, like Riff said, if you make a vote on players, it would be 100%. Everyone would vote 1-8, and then you reseed.
And is that simple. I just don't understand why it's so hard. I don't understand why it's so hard. It really isn't that hard, right, Vanner?
It's not hard at all.
The league in Boston should be playing number 8, and that's Pittsburgh. Carolina is going to play Washington Capitals. New Jersey Devils is going to play the Rangers. And you're going to have Toronto play Tampa Bay, which is basically what's happening right now.
Right. No, I mean, we played in this format too. And again, I don't know why we didn't have more of a pushback as a PA, as a union. Like there is a committee board, right? Those players should be making it more vocal to the media, just like Sydney did, that this is not right. This is dumb. This is stupid.
I thought it was amazing that he said that, because he's not a guy that really goes against the grain or speaks out against anything ever.
Well, it shows how strongly he believes about something. When Sidney Crosby, who, I mean, this guy is like a freaking ghost away from the rink. You know nothing about him. You don't know if he's married, if he's got kids. You don't know anything about this guy. He is just, he is like,
well, I don't think he's got a kids. Otherwise, he would have been next to Sergey on the ice.
Sergey and Sid's kid probably would have gone in 2-on-1 on, Cale Makar toe dragged him, walked him, and then goalie would have let him score. Yeah. And we all would have been talking about how amazing it was.
Yeah. But, you know, listen, I mean, when he says something, when Sidney Crosby says something along this magnitude, okay, I think you have to listen as a league. I mean, if you, like I said before, if you were to do a poll, it would be a strong, strong, strong vote for the 1-8.
This is exceptional today. See, Petey, this is why I need to start my own podcast with Petey. And we go after the whistle, but it's after Rivet, or as Petey said, what did you want to call it?
Lone Rivets.
God, we need the people to vote if they need a second pod called Blown Rivets.
That would be fantastic. After the whistle.
Go ahead.
Why do you two guys do this? Every podcast.
It's
the same thing. It's like you two guys are the two Muppets, the two Muppet guys sitting up on the in the balcony.
Well, listen, Listen, what we're watching is you say Bo Horvat's a lifer in Vancouver.
Yeah, what happened there? I never got a response back. And then you said he went into the office, you believe, and they're going to trade him for pieces, but then come back in the summer.
But then he gets a 8 for 8.5
without even playing a game. He's never.
Are you shocked? Are you shocked with that?
Or do you? No, because I said from day one he's going to get traded.
I know, but you can get traded, but then re-sign.
I am 1,000,000% shocked. Thomas, I don't know what it is. Like, okay, so, I mean...
What are you shocked about? That he re-signed?
That he signed there.
Why? It's an 8-year deal.
I just shocked. I don't see... Listen. I don't see Long Island as a destination for a guy like Bo Horvat. I don't see Long Island as a team that is going to be in the hunt for the next 8 years. I mean, I could drastically be wrong, but I just don't see it.
No, I never. I, don't
know. I don't know. I guess I saw you turn down a $50 million deal there, and I think, why the fuck do players want to sign there? Like, Tavares didn't want to go there. He left there and left them high and dry for nothing. Oposo leaves. You leave. You know,
way different now with that new building. It's a game changer. Living on Long Island is unbelievable. It's the same as we talk about Buffalo. Guys fly in. They only see what they see for 24 hours and leave. And they're like, I never want to play there. Long Island was the same. We stayed at that shitty hotel across the Coliseum and we're like, what is this place? But then when you actually live there and you get to know the area, it is just like Buffalo, an unbelievable place to live and to play.
The thing I remember about that hotel is Chris Drury saying to Doug McKinney, Dougie, we got to do something about this rubber chicken.
Oh, yeah. The food, the broiled chicken.
So what are your thoughts on the signing? You know, you can say you're surprised or not surprised. Is this the right number, and is this the right fit for, you know, when I kind of did some research on the Islanders, like, I think 8.5, and this is just my opinion, I think 8.5 is somewhere in his ballpark. Okay. It might be a little bit high for me. I know he's produced at an 8.5+ million dollar player, but throughout his career, he's not an $8.5 million player. That being said, when you look at the salary cap, and I don't know if you guys have gone to the Islanders, This is not a terrible contract. These guys right now are in a win now mode. You know, Matt Barzell, Anders Lee, Brock Nelson, Josh Bailey, Kyle Palmieri, JP Gabriel Pageau. Like, these guys have older players that are really good, and I think they're hoping that Bo Horvat is a guy that can kind of take them over the top.
100%. I mean, I think it's a great deal for the Islanders. Like I said, I'm a big Bo Horvat fan, mainly because, you know, I played with him. So I see what kind of talent he is and what kind of person he is. The most surprising thing about that signing was, to me, what did Vancouver offer him to not keep that person in-house in Vancouver to build around? Because obviously they that new regime must have not thought very highly off of him, because they were willing to give a JT Miller 8 years at $8 million.
Yep.
But they were not willing to resign their captain at $8.5 million. So obviously there was some dysfunction there. As far as the Islanders, I think it's a great piece. I mean, I don't think they gave up that much to
not
give
at
up.
All.
They didn't give up much at all to get a great player on the ice, but an awesome leader off the ice. So I think this move is a home run.
And I guess opinion. I just look at it, Thomas, and I don't think about a kid from London, Ontario, who played for the London Knights, who spent his entire career, like he played for St. Thomas. That's where Joe Thornton played. Like, so he's a Western Ontario boy. And I guess, you know, he spent his entire career out west of Canada. And I guess I just don't see, I don't understand a kid coming from that situation to the Islanders. I guess, you know, I don't know. I guess I assumed Detroit. I assumed he would have wanted to try to get to Toronto. I mean,
I get it, but it comes back to what I've, you know, mentioned in pods before when we were talking Dylan Cousins' contract. Sometimes it's hard to turn down a big contract like that and see what's out there in the summer for him. Because all these spots you're mentioning, how do you know that they will give you, you know, 7 at 9 to come close to the 8 for $8.5 we just signed? How do you know that?
Yeah.
You don't know that. Just like a Dylan Cousins, if the Buffalo Sabres are willing to give him the Tage Thompson deal at 7 for $7, you can say that's a great deal, but if I'm Cousins, I'm not taking that because the cap's going up and I want more. Well, it's going to be tough for a young kid who's 22 to turn down that money when he has made money, but he hasn't made significant money.
Okay, would you have turned down the Islanders offer if you hadn't received that offer sheet offer?
100%. I've made money. I mean, and I've said it. It's I was blessed by what I made at that point. So I was. Was it easy to turn that offer down? Well, it wasn't, but I knew come the summertime, I'm not coming close to that contract. I knew it. But again, to me, it wasn't about money anymore because I've made my money. Yeah. I wanted to experience free agency. Looking back, it didn't turn out the way it did for me, but so what? Who cares? That's a choice I made, and I'm happy I made it.
So let me
ask
you
this. But at the same time, if this building would have been, Island 6-7 years ago or whenever it was, 100% I would have stayed, because that team reminded me, like I said before, my early years in Buffalo with Tavares, with Okposo and Bailey and all those. It was an awesome, awesome team. But again, you can hear the noise within the locker room that they're moving to Brooklyn, and you can tell, guys, we're not happy about it.
So
that was the main reason.
When you signed that offer sheet with Edmonton, was there any part of you that was kind of like, man, I really hope it gets matched because I don't want to go to Edmonton? Because Edmonton wasn't a real destination place at that point in time.
Well, I was hoping to get matched for sure, because I loved the group I was at. I loved where we were living at. But at the same time, I'd never talked to Buffalo, and I've mentioned it before on here. It's I actually chose Edmonton. I had 4 or 5 other teams with offer sheets, and Edmonton was in the Cup final the year before. you know, it was a good team. I played there when I was 14, hour outside. There, so
Edmonton didn't bother you. That's right.
I grew up in the mountains back home. I'm used to cold. So it was, for me, it was always about hockey, not about destination.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Do you find that mindset has changed today?
Well, my mindset
has changed. How many players like you that were at a high level that were, you know, younger and want to go to Winnipeg, you know, that want to go to Edmonton, places like this?
Yeah, for sure it's changed because, I mean, you can see it changing. Those teams have to, just like Buffalo, they have to do a great job either trading for players or drafting players, because the big free agents aren't coming. I mean, look at the Edmonton Oilers. They got two of the best players in the world. And yes, they got a Hyman to get there and so on and so on. But why isn't the Corey Perry, why is he signing $1 million in Tampa and not signing in Edmonton? And then, Tampa is a top team, but maybe there's another veteran I can't think of. Why are they not able to get more of those guys to play in Edmonton?
Yeah, like Zach Bogosian. You know, he's making what, $850,000?
Yeah.
I mean, that's surprising, but he feels that he's on a good team. He's supported. He's already made a lot of money throughout the course of his career. Corey Perry's the same thing. He made a ton of money in Anaheim, and now he's choosing where he wants to play. And Florida, number one, is the weather is great, the team is very strong, and that's why they're taking ultimate hometown discounts, right?
Yes. So for teams like the Oilers, like the Jets, the Buffalo Sabres, I strongly believe you gotta trade for good players and draft good players, because free agency is not your ticket. Just like when we played there, the Drurys and the Briers, those were trades.
How long does it take?
Those are the guys you need.
How long does it take for players in the league to change a mindset on a organization destination? Like Buffalo, if you go back, you know, hasn't made the playoffs in 11 years. The organization years ago, okay, when the team was, you know, back in 2005, 2006, 2007, you know, the team was a destination. People wanted to go there because the Buffalo Sabres were so strong, so competitive. And now things have changed in the league. How long is it going to take before the mindset changes? How many years of success does the Buffalo Sabres team need to have before guys change their mindset?
Even in those years, I don't think Buffalo was a destination just because we're good. I mean, and nowadays, I think it's even more harder because you can only sign a 7-year ticket as a free agent.
Yep.
So those top guys, they can get that same deal wherever they want. I mean, when Christian Ehrhoff signed with the Buffalo Sabres, well, the main reason he signed in Buffalo is because no one else was willing to give him 10 years. Teams were probably willing to give him 7 years. And if back then, if 7 years was the limit, well, guess what? I don't think he would have been a Buffalo Sabre. So I don't think it's never the destination. Part of it, what I'm saying is never going to change. It doesn't matter how good your team is. You have to trade people. You have to draft people. And once they live there, they're going to be like, hey, this place is good. The people are awesome. This place is, you know, and that's how you build a team in a place like Buffalo, in my opinion.
Are the Sabres in a position now to have to do something because the Islanders got better?
Well, you know my answer. If you can improve your team, you do it. Do they have to do it? No, because obviously they have been playing good enough hockey with what they have. But I'm always in the mindset, if you can improve your team, just like the Islanders certainly improved their team by giving up a draft pick and this and signing this guy long-term, then you do it. I mean, now there's rumors that Dylan Larkin can't get a contract, and we all know that Yzerman is pretty straight line with his contracts like he was in Tampa. You either like it or you leave it, just like with Stamkos he did, and then they ended up coming to terms. I mean, that's a guy who might be out of there in the next 4 weeks, which would be surprising.
You believe that, eh? You believe that Yzerman would be stubborn's not the word I want to use, but
how much is Larkin? What do you think he's asking for?
Like,
what would be a contract that would make sense for a Dylan like Larkin type player? Plus.
I think it starts with a 9. Where it ends, I don't know if it's right at 9, if it's 9.5. That's kind of, I think, what he's asking for at an 8-year term. And again, Yzerman has shown in the past that, I mean, he didn't Stamkos, didn't he talk to Montreal, Toronto, Detroit, and then ultimately.
Hey, I'd let him walk too if he's adamant about a 9. I'd let him walk if the first number is an 8. I'd let him walk if. Like,
so how much are you willing
what
to
did,
give
what
him?
Did you just What did you just say?
An
you
would let him
walk. He's not, not an $8 million player. He's never put up $8 million numbers. Not even fucking close. If Tage Thompson signed that deal for $7.1 million, I know they're different ages. I know he's a UFA. Who the fuck's going to pay this guy $8 million? Nobody. Jeff Skinner got $9 million when he scored 40. Dylan Larkin is a 30-goal guy, maybe. This year he's on pace for the high 20s. You know, he's on pace for 75 points. It's not $9 million. Just because you're – what happened with Bo Horvat is a message sender – yep. To Dylan Larkin, in my opinion.
So what's the contract? What is his contract that makes you happy?
You're nuts, makes me Petey, happy. By the way,
pardon?
You're telling me when he hits free agency, there's not one team that will pay him $8 million?
I'm saying, as Steve Yzerman, I'm not paying him $8 million. If another team wants to pay him $8 million, then go get your $8+ million. But I'll give you 7.5. I'll give you 7.75. But I'm not going to 8. If you're going to be an 80-point guy, look, you're telling me Dylan Larkin shouldn't be in a position to take a hometown discount? Grew up, played for Michigan, NTDP, University of Michigan, Grand Rapids Griffins, Detroit Red Wings, born in Detroit. Like, yeah, take a fucking hometown discount. Show everybody
Here's the thing, though. We don't know what he's getting offered. Who knows? I mean,
he's making 6 right now.
Yeah,
he's making 6.1,
and that's pretty goddamn fair. Like, his salary right now is extremely fair for what he does statistically. Let's be honest.
So.
I can't even dig in and argue with it, Petey. I'm looking at his stats right now. And he has not produced a super high level of offense throughout his time. He's -84. He's been minus every year except his first year in the league. He was +11. And, you know, the best year that he's had in the league has been 73 points, 32 goals, which was one hell of a year. And he's had a 31 goal, 69 points in 71 games. But The other seasons were not anywhere near that, Van. So I look at his statistics and I'm like, he's under a point a game type player, and he's probably a solid 25 goal guy. So what does that equate to? 25 goals and 70 points. What does that equate to in this league?
$7 million. But because he's captain, I'll give him 7.5.
Okay. Now, how many years has Dahlin played in the league?
This is fifth.
This is his fifth. His first 4 years, was he a plus player?
No.
Was he a high producer?
Yes.
He was every year. He was a high producer.
Well, yeah. Listen, I mean, his first year in the league when he was 18 years old, he had 44 points, 9 goals. It's insane.
Okay. So it's
the next
million.
Year he had 40 points in 59 games. He still had 23 games to go and he had 40 points. Let's just say he has another 10 points. Even he's at 50 points as a 19-year-old defenseman. That's insane.
Okay.
Now this is playing on a team That is absolutely awful.
There you go. That was where I'm getting to.
Okay.
So the Detroit Red Wings, for most of Larkin's career, has been like the Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah.
Average goaltending, average D. This is the first year where they're kind of starting to build and getting more better players surrounding a Dylan Larkin. So sometimes I know we get caught up in these statistics, and they are important. I'm not saying they aren't. If a guy can score 30-plus goals every year, close to 40, he's going to get paid a lot of money.
Yeah.
But you also have to look at the whole package of what this guy brings. He has been on shitty teams for a long time. So, and again, we don't know what he's asking. If I would be hard-pressed, Dylan Larkin, if they offer him eight, starting with an eight, I think he would take it and stay in Detroit where he's born and raised and loved.
Well,
but who knows what they're offering him.
Listen, I mean, Bo Horvat, if you go back to Bo Horvat's statistics throughout his time, he's Vanner. Would you think that he would be like anywhere from a 50 to 60 point guy?
Yeah. Well, that's what he is, right? A 50, 60 point guy.
Right. I mean, that's kind of what Bo Horvat has been throughout his career. Now he's played, what, 9 years in the league. Bo Horvat had 52 points last year, 31 goals in 70 games. Then he had 39 points. Then he had 53 points, 61 points, 44 points, 52 points, 40 points. You get what I'm saying? Bo Horvat is not a point producing freak. He is not putting up 80, 90 points a season. He's putting up 50. In between 50 and maybe 60 points. Do you know how many? You know how many times Bo Horvat's put up 60 points plus in his career? One time. Okay. So what I'm trying to say is, Bo Horvat broke out in his 27 year old year. He's having a career year in 49 games. He has 31 goals and 54 points. But that's not what Bo Horvat is. He's going to come back to planet Earth. Okay. He's making $8 million, $8.5 million. Dylan Larkin is a very comparable type player to Bo Horvat. They're both captains. They're both have been in the league a number of years. And I think Dylan Larkin is kind of like one of the faces of that franchise. And I think he's worth around $8.5 million.
Don't you think Yzerman has the biggest bargaining chip here because he knows that Larkin wants to be a Red Wing and the captain of the Red Wings? Like, he's from Michigan, diehard Red Wings, whole house was Red Wings. I saw this feature on him like a few years ago.
Yeah. No, I think you're right.
Be a Red Wing. So, I mean, he's.
But again.
Go ahead.
Yes. No, I think you're right. He definitely, he knows that Dylan wants to stay there. 100% he does. So I would be, you know, I'm sure they'll figure it out. But again, back to Petey's point about statistics and this and this, but then I hear you guys talk. You guys, you know, will love this summer for that. What's his name? I even played with him in Columbus. He signed in Columbus. Good Branson, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'll give him $4 million any day. Correct? Isn't that what you guys?
Yeah.
A type of player like that.
Well, remember this though; it's not our money. So I mean.
No, it's not. I understand, but again,
I know.
You're paying him $4 million, not for statistics, right? You're paying him $4 million for the type of presence that he brings on the ice. And that's the same thing. Larkin and Horvat, they might not put up those numbers like a 90 point guy or something, but they also bring intangibles that are very important to a winning team down the center ice position, which is, as we all know, you need centers.
Yeah.
So you again, I think we're all arguing
Is there a place out there, Vanner, that you think that Dylan Larkin may have the ability to go to? Like, maybe he's the one standing pat. Like, Dylan Larkin has been the leading scorer of the team for years, but the team has stunk. Okay. Dylan Larkin's minus 84 in the time that he's played in the NHL. Is there a point that Dylan Larkin, who, what is he, 26 years old, man?
Yeah.
How old is he? Like, is there a point where he's looking at an opportunity to say, if you're not going to pay me, like really pay me, then I'm going to go and see what my worth is on the open market. And when you look at his worth, how many teams are going to want a player like Dylan Larkin?
He won't do it, man. He's going to crumble. He's a Red Wing by heart. I'm sorry. He'll take what he's offered, I bet.
No, yeah, I don't know about that. I agree with Ribs. I think, you know, I can see him even like in a Boston Bruins uniform.
Could you see Dylan Larkin leaving the Red Wings?
For sure. I mean, at the end of the day, it's
who are the
it's
two,
a short career.
Who are the it's two a short who are the two centermen in Montreal? Nick Suzuki and exactly.
Yeah.
Montreal right now at his age would salivate over getting a player along that stature.
Yep.
You know, you can kind of go through the league and you can see fits in cities. What about Philadelphia? Do you think Philadelphia would love to get their hands on a Dylan Larkin? Like, you can continue to go through the league and you can say, because he is not a $9, $10, $11 million guy, we're talking about an $8, $8.5 million guy. I think there's going to be a lot of teams that would love nothing more to get their hands on Dylan Larkin.
I think he'll exactly. Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, even the Columbus Blue Jackets, his best buddy, Varensky plays there. I can see them making a run at a guy like Larkin. You know, they're trying to get to that next level, obviously by signing Goodrow. So he'll have plenty of options coming.
I don't know if they want to free agency. The money can work, but I know that Anze Kopitar is getting a little older in L.A.
Yeah, yeah, plenty of options.
Be a long time centerman there in L.A.
I mean, how about Seattle Kraken? So Seattle Kraken sitting first in their division right now. When you sit there and you look at Seattle Kraken, they get no respect whatsoever. But when you look at their team, they're clearly doing something special in the league. Okay. And I wonder to myself, when does Seattle start to pull the trigger on really making this team better? Are they going to stand pat like, you know, the Buffalo Sabres, Kevin Adams, having a mindset of we need to, you know, develop through our draft picks and stuff like that? Or is this a situation where, you know, we can provide a team that's highly competitive right now, a playoff team, and we can absolutely use a player of your stature? Very interesting. You know, there's a lot of teams in the league, I think, that are going to be very, and I mean very, interested in Dylan Larkin if he comes on the market.
I don't see him leaving. Was there anything else you guys wanted to discuss today before we got out of here?
Nope. All good. Yeah, I got to move on. I got after the whistle right now.
So here's what we'll prep for, Van, you and I. This will be the opening conversation for after the whistle. 91% of people skip the first slice of bread just because it's ugly. A lot of people skip over that.
I'm surprised it's not higher. I thought that piece was just there to keep the other bread like intact.
Yeah, you thought it was a bookend?
We're going to call that piece Petey.
That happens to be my favorite piece of bread in the whole.
And you're the only one.
I'll start saving hours and send it to you.
I'll eat them stale. That's a wrap on another episode of After the Whistle. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, After the Whistle, and at Craig Revay 52, at the Instigator 76. And you can find us, as you already know, on Apple, Spotify, and YouTube, and anywhere else where you can get your podcasts. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget to spread the word.